long list of replacements is headed to the governor's desk for suspended Jacksonville City Council members. Hiring controversies as Duval County Schools interim superintendent steps aside but promotes her own relatives. And another rash of homicides in the city, including another transgender person. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. And thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live on the radio at 9. Also, make sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Just ahead, it was a busy week in the news. We'll look back at the week that was with our Friday Media Roundtable. You can get on the line right now at 549-2937. Then later, speaking of the news, a major announcement this week from the city's Daily Record paper. Plus, don't miss our spotlight on indie folk band The Hunts. They're playing Hemming Park tonight. It's a free show. We'll listen to their music and talk to the band coming up. All of that ahead this morning. But first, it's Friday and time for our weekly roundtable as we talk about a very busy news week with Tessa Duvall, reporter for the Florida Times Union. Good morning.
Good morning.
David Cotton writes for the Jacksonville Daily Record.
Good morning.
Local radio host Angela Spears is here today.
Good morning, Melissa.
And our own WJCT reporter, Ryan Bank.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for being here, everybody. Lots to talk about this week. Did you hear that ViStar made a big move downtown? We'll tell you about that. The city is dealing with more homicides, more gun violence, and the school board is dealing with allegations of nepotism from its outgoing superintendent. All of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, leading the roundtable, a scrum of candidates is trying to nab a couple of open city council seats. Jacksonville City Council members Katrina Brown and Reggie Brown have been suspended by the governor as they both face 38 federal counts, including fraud. So there is now a long list of some fairly prominent names trying to replace them, and they have landed on Governor Scott's desk. The list includes former City Councilman King Holzendorf, former school board chair Brenda Priestley Jackson, current council candidates Tamika Holly, Celeste Mills, and Kevin Monroe, former state representative Terry Fields, and Jacoby Pittman, CEO of the Clara White Mission. Who will get the nod? And there are some rumblings as well about this process. What are your thoughts about this? Give us a call at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online and send your emails to First Coast Connect at WJCT.org, tweets to at Melissa in Jax, or weigh in on Facebook. Angela Spears, let's begin with you. There's a list of well-known names trying to get these seats. Excuse me, the governor will make the decision, and not everyone's happy with that, correct?
Not everyone is happy with that. I've been talking with people about this process and what they think, and a lot of people tell me that they're asking the two council persons, suspended council persons, to just resign because they want to have the choice to be able to vote who they want in office. They don't want the governor coming in, picking someone who may or may not really know the district, know what's going on, and can address their issues. So people really, really want their voices heard, want that democratic process to be able to vote for that council member. A lot of people, too, are obviously disturbed. Yeah, by what's going on and what's happening.
By the indictments,
yes.
Generally, yeah.
In general, they're just upset.
Yeah, and you know, to be clear, these two council members were very adamant in saying they are not resigning because that would, I guess, be an admission of guilt on their part that they did something wrong. You know, at the Daily Record, I think we look at this also through a business lens. You know, if I'm someone trying to open a business on that side of town, there's a lot of uncertainty right now. You know, there's something to be said about a district council member being able to carry something as minute as a zoning, rezoning ordinance or something that, you know, you just need to get through council. And how are you going to build a relationship with someone you don't know right now who is just put in there?
And there are a lot of great things going on. The Northwest Jacksonville Community Development Corporation is working really, really hard in the community to bring that area, especially there on Moncrief, back to life. A pharmacy just moved into the area. You have a pharmacy school there. So there's so many good things that people are trying to do. They want to build a grocery store in that area. And you're right. So where does that leave that process?
Tessa Duvall, whoever Governor Scott picks to replace Katrina Brown and Reggie Brown would serve until either these two are exonerated or the new people are elected July 1st in 2019. And so the law states that this is up to the governor to replace these indicted public officials. That's the law, whether or not, you know, people like it. That's the statute currently.
Those are two different things often, what people like and yes. what the person in power can do.
Yeah, that can apply to a lot of situations.
A lot of things, yeah. I mean, regardless of what happens with these two council members, it is certainly their constituents who are the ones who are paying the price. I mean, regardless of whether they're convicted, whether they plea, whether they're innocent, regardless of what happens, it's their constituents who are going without their chosen elected voice in office. And that is, I mean, that is really what I think a lot of people who live in those districts want to be heard as saying. It's like they want their voices in there. How much the governor takes that into account when we know he has a very solid relationship with the mayor, that remains to be seen.
Right. Would he appoint those who might be the personal favorites of Mayor Lenny Curry, for example? Will that play a part in this process?
Don't make me put words in the mayor's mouth.
Okay. So there are a couple of things here that are competing. So the first thing, obviously, is, yes, Governor Rick Scott obviously has a close relationship with Mayor Lenny Curry, who used to be the chairman of the Republican Party in Florida. And so even without any real evidence to suggest that there's anything going on behind the scenes that would be subverting the will of voters, there is a perception problem there. And I think anybody would have to admit that. But there's a second layer here, which is many people were quick to point out that Governor Rick Scott did not choose to suspend Matt Shirk, the public defender, for his controversies that he had.
A Republican public defender.
Despite calls to do so. His reasoning for it, his reasoning was that the people deserve to choose who will replace him. So he didn't want to subvert the will of the people. On top of this, we have a large contingent of people from those districts who feel like, just like they did with Corrine Brown, congresswoman who was recently convicted on charges and sent to prison that are similar fraud charges, they feel like Katrina Brown and Reggie Brown are being railroaded here and that there's a double standard. And so they want them to stay in office. They don't want them to resign and they don't want them to be replaced.
And it's 549-2937. What do you think about this, everybody listening out there? Are Katrina Brown and Reggie Brown being railroaded? Is there an unfair double standard when Republicans don't suspend their own, but Democrats face a different fate? David Cotton, as Ryan pointed out, Matt Shirk's troubles, Corrine Brown troubles now, these two city council members, we could go back to Tony Nelson at the port. Mm-hmm. There have been a slew of public officials and other prominent folks around town over a period of many years who have been indicted or faced other allegations of financial irregularities or allegations of personal misconduct. And it's really casting this patina of corruption over the city that is not something the Chamber of Commerce or Visit Jacksonville particularly wants the city being known for, but we are becoming known for that. We've been known for that, and it's getting worse, unfortunately.
Yeah, you know, it's not a great look. I know me and Ryan were talking about this outside of the federal courthouse, waiting for these council members to come out with their attorneys saying, you know, peers of ours are asking us what's going on in Jacksonville, right?
Right.
And I know that the Chamber of Commerce, the incoming council president, Aaron Bowman, who is a vice president over at the Chamber of Commerce, to add another layer to Ryan, he's also going to probably have a little bit of a say in who gets put into these council positions. I know that they're not happy over there. They don't like this good news. They're already dealing with other bad news this week with the shootings, which we're going to talk about later, this, you know, idea that downtown is a dangerous place. And now we've got this other corruption, you know, cloud hanging over Jacksonville. It's not great if you're someone who has outside capital and you're looking to invest in a city. Do I really want to invest in Jacksonville?
Let's go to your calls. 549-2937. Herman is on the south side. Hey, Herman. Good morning.
Good morning, Dr. Rouse.
You keep promoting me, Herman. Are you going to pay for me to go to grad school? Because that would be awesome. Go ahead, Herman.
You could go to school and teach them some stuff. You really could. But again, another fantastic show. and I'm sure you and the guests can help me understand this, we're looking at consolidation this year. And with those five at-large council districts, I don't see why they cannot absorb the weight or the pressure or the transition of this district. And if they can't, then maybe it's time to get rid of the at-large system. And I guess looking at consolidation, it has been said that those at-large districts were made to dilute the power of those minority access districts. So I don't see why five at-large council people can't absorb this weight.
Thank you, Herman. The at-large city council system, Angela Spears, David Cotton. What about Herman's comments?
That currently is being done. Councilman Sam Newby is taking over a district, and the council president, Anna Brochet, is taking over one of the districts as well. So they're doing, they're at large, and now that particular district.
Plus the district. Yeah. But what about his larger point that they the at-large system was initially designed to dilute the power of minority representation?
Well, I think in this case, you have to make an exception. You know, when you have two members within the same area of town, you know, maybe it would be a little different if, you know, maybe this was someone who covered the south side and someone who covered the north side, but these districts are right next to each other, essentially. Mm-hmm. And so that, I think, puts more pressure to fill that hole because you've got one big gap now. But yeah, I mean, to that point, I think you have to make an exception at this point.
Okay, John is along the Matthews Bridge. Hi, John. Good morning.
Well, good morning, and thank you for taking my call. And let's just say Jacksonville, it ain't easier here.
John, you're a harsh caller, but I understand your point. Go ahead, John.
Okay. Well, with all this taking place with the governor and possibly appointing, will there be the ultimate debate? I mean, will the governor even just come in and just have all the panelists and you know, just have one big debate? That's one thing I'd like to just touch on. And another thing, too, you know, when you do talk about, you know, just the public trust in Jacksonville overall, you know, we just lost our inspector general. We currently have a task force on open government that is taking place, has about 30 days left, and no one shows up at any of these meetings. And so, you know, it really goes to the core of, you know, trying to really, you know, bring back really just the public trust.
Yeah.
You know,
okay.
In the community.
Thanks for that call. Tessa.
I'm sorry. So I had a little bit of hard time hearing the caller.
Right. But he just commenting on the erosion of public trust in our institutions. That's a big problem nationally, but locally as well. You know,
no, absolutely. You know, I think that transitioning into the next topic that we'll be talking about regarding I can hear now. Thank you. Regarding what we're going to talk about with the school district and the appointment of principals related to the interim superintendent. I mean, these things, regardless of, you know, what is actually happening, perception is such a huge part of what's happening with these situations.
Fabrizio emails the show, would it be legal for the governor to refuse to select replacement council members and allow for a special election?
I'm not entirely sure on that, but
I don't think any of us has the answer to that. But the unimpeachable Kevin Mershart, as I look across the glass to the master control room, he is shaking his head. And he points out that they are still members of city council. So unless they refuse to step down, unless they step down willingly, rather, this is what we're dealing with. Okay. All right. And if you're just tuning in, it's our Friday Media Roundtable as we talk about the biggest stories of the week. The number to join us, 549-2937. As Tessa mentioned, the Duval County Public Schools is dealing with some problems of its own. Allegations of nepotism. Now, the city has a new superintendent, but the person walking out the door, the interim chief, is being criticized for promoting her son and her niece to higher posts within the school district as she heads out the door. Outgoing Superintendent Patricia Willis promoted her son Richard and her niece Deshaun Bush with just a few weeks left to go in her term before the new superintendent, Diana Green, starts in July. School board member Scott Shine has asked Willis to rescind these promotions, saying it's a bad look. Tessa.
I mean, it certainly is a bad look. I mean, regardless of their qualifications, the fact that a relative, and in one case a parent, put them into their position, it just goes back to the perception of this. They could be highly qualified. They could be the most qualified people for the job, but the fact that it was ultimately a relative who was presiding when this decision was made, that's going to cast a shadow over it.
Yeah, there are anti-nepotism laws in place for a reason.
And to Tessa's point too, you know, if they're so qualified, then the new superintendent would have no problem promoting them in that spot. You know, I think a lot of times what happens in these situations is these officials forget, you know, this is not a private company. You know, this is public.
We do have to understand, though, just to add a little bit extra layer of context,
please, yes,
is that the school board had to vote on these, and although
exactly,
they did, and although
okay,
they did not know that they were related, they
some
still
of them
looked,
did.
So, well, it depend. From last I knew, they did not know that they were related, but the point still stands. They have said since then that they would have made the same decision to vote for those
That's
people
true.
Regardless, and that is an important part of the context to this story.
And
now, there is a perception problem.
There's the appearance of favoritism.
Right.
Yes, there is that appearance, but if they're qualified, why should that hinder a person from getting a job? If that person is qualified, and Melissa, you know, you talked about nepotism in football. I know it may not be the same in football, but it happens all the time. Bobby Bowden, did he hire his sons? You have Mike Shanahan hiring his son, Kyle Shanahan. It happens all the time. But if they're qualified and you feel that person should come
on. The president of the United States.
Of course.
Has put his own
daughter and
son-in-law in the White House.
So if that person is qualified, why should that person be hindered from a job opportunity?
Then why not disclose it? I think that is the problem. That is what's hanging over this. Why not say, oh, by the way, I happen to be related to them, but I believe that their records, their performance.
Did she put down anyone else she knew? Because she could have known some of the other principals, the assistant principals
on
the list.
I think knowing and being related are different things.
But, you know, and I'm glad you're pointing out all this context, Ryan. But for me, as we talk about the city council situation and now the school board situation and many other stories we've covered over the years, it just goes back to this larger narrative that's running through the city that cronyism is rampant, that public officials are corrupt, that they scratch each other's backs, they take care of their nearest and dearest, the wealthy and connected are slurping from the trough. This is the image of Duval that is really taken hold, and it's not good.
And it doesn't do us any favors, and Willis didn't do herself any favors. I'm not saying, again, I prefaced by saying this is a perception problem. And Tessa, that's a very important point to point out. Like, she could have just disclosed it. They would have voted on it the way it was. It probably would have never been a story.
Probably.
Right. But at the same time, we have to understand that the people that were supposed to be the check on Willis's power unanimously and without discussion passed these appointments. So we should be talking a little bit about their decision making. So Scott Shine can say what he wants here, but there was a decision making that was on the board's part.
It's their job to do the research and who they want to promote, right? Mm-hmm. So you're right, Ryan. I think so.
Okay. If you're just tuning in, the number to join us is 549-2937. As we talk about the biggest stories from the week. Also this week, disturbing news. A series of fatal shootings in the city, including shootings over by the St. John's Town Center. And also, police recorded the second transgender homicide of this year in Jacksonville. Antasha Devine Sherrington English was killed Friday in Durkeyville. The Human Rights Campaign, which lobbies for the LGBTQ community, says it's the 11th known homicide of a transgender person this year. They said last year there were 28 violent transgender deaths in the U.S., the most ever recorded. English was killed just a few blocks from her home in Springfield on the first day of Pride Month. At the same time, a series of shootings on the south side near the St. John's Town Center have also shocked the community. David Cotton, in accordance with our public corruption problem, of course, Jacksonville is also sadly well known for its gun violence and murder rate problem. And this is more of the same.
Yeah. And I think for a lot of people who, you know, have become desensitized to hearing about another murder on the news every night, I think especially with what happened on the town, you know, near the town center, it becomes, you know, a little close to home for the more, I guess you would say, affluent people in town who, you know, see this town center as a safe spot. I mean, 19-year-olds lost their lives over there, this week. And, the sheriff came out and said something to the effect of, you know, they were on the wrong end of the music industry. You know, instead of saying, well, maybe we have a larger problem, it's blaming the music industry or something else. I remember growing up here and one day going to Regency Square Mall and being like, wow, this isn't safe anymore. It used to be the go-to place. I'm not saying the town center is anywhere near that, but, you know, what happened to Regency? We sort of just forgot about it.
And as you pointed out, as long as people can say, oh, that's not in my part of town, I don't need to worry about this. People close their eyes. They don't worry. They don't feel compassion for victims that are in more high crime neighborhoods. Unfortunately, this is a problem that is citywide. And what's it going to take for people to wake up and demand change? I mean, we're looking at 3 more young men dead, another in critical condition. This happened on Town Center Parkway between UNF and the Town Center retail area. And whatever the circumstances of the shooting, for me, I mean, the important thing to focus on is that 3 young people were killed, 3 more.
What are we going to do? You know, Melissa, you just asked that question. What are we going to do? You know, does it go back to us looking at the gun laws again? Does it go back to us putting more programs to keep kids safe? Does it go back to more community policing? Is it more of us saying, hey, we're not going to do this? Is it parental? I don't know. You know, that's the problem of where do you stand when it comes to something like this? These kids were out, you know, regardless of, like you said, Melissa, regardless of what happened, 3 children are dead. 3 mm-hmm. more of our youth are gone.
And at the same time, another transgender person was killed this week in the city of Jacksonville. And that, as I pointed out, the Human Rights Campaign keeps statistics. And they said last year were the most violent deaths to this community that they've ever recorded.
And it's also worth pointing out that the victim was the 2nd Black trans woman. I mean, we know how much intersectionality plays in this whole thing. So for 11 trans murders to be recorded in the nation this year and 2 to be in Jacksonville and them to both be Black trans women, I mean, women, that is significant.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because we know that racism and combined with perceptions toward the LGBTQ community, we know how those 2 things intersect, and the result is we've lost 2 people.
AJ is in St. Johns County. AJ, good morning. You're on the air.
Hey, this is AJ with Mad Dads. I think in order for a lot of this gun violence to end, our community's going to have to step up and turn these guys and girls in. Right now, we probably had about 51 homicides in our city. Maybe about 6 of those have been solved. So we need more community engagement. These people, after they commit these horrific crimes, they go home, they go to their friend's house, and people are harboring these criminals. So our community got to speak up more if we want.
AJ, tell us a little bit more about what Mad Dads is doing. And you've been working in the community for years.
Well, what we do, we go out in the community and we try to encourage the community to come forward. We go knock on doors, we go in homes and sit with some of the families and try to get them to turn some of these people in. Some of them need to be in jail and some of them got mental issues that need to be addressed. So it's a twofold thing, but we got to keep pushing. We got to keep trying. But Mad Dads always encouraged the community to come forward with the information, even if it's your son, even if it's your friend. We got to get these guys off the streets.
Thanks, AJ. Thanks for calling. Thanks for what you do as well. And
thank you.
You know, that's an organization like so many others that have been trying and trying for years to bring down the murder rate in this city.
Very, very active in the community, there on the streets, talking, as AJ mentioned, talking with people, talking with families, and that community engagement is crucial. It is something that we as a community, we all have to step up and say something and not be afraid to say something. And he pointed on something that was very interesting, mental health being a big issue.
Yeah.
Of what's going on. Is that a possibility?
And we're talking about homicide, but gun violence accounts for a lot of suicides as well in America. And of course, we all woke up to the news that celebrity chef and host Anthony Bourdain has committed suicide, not apparently by a gun, but you're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. And that's another big problem. And it's so frustrating sometimes on this show talking about these issues because we feel like a broken record. We're not progressing on any of these issues in this city at all.
Well, in fact, I think one of the most interesting aspects, or one would say ironic aspects, about the violent stories in Jacksonville is that the Governor Rick Scott was just here releasing the uniform crime statistics for the state. If you combine all crimes, including violent and nonviolent, Jacksonville has seen a little bit more than a 1% reduction from 2016 to 2017. However, if you look at all of the violent crimes, rape, murder, assault, all of those ticked up from 2016 to 2017. Now, the sheriff, Mike Williams, says that we have seen so far in this year a drop, which it depends on if you go neighborhood by neighborhood. You've seen some drops in some neighborhoods and some rises in others. However, it doesn't really look good when you have all of these violent crimes increasing and not decreasing.
Well, that and this is, you know, this is the beginning of the summer and these incidents involved young people. That is not a good predictor of what could come this summer.
Yeah.
I mean, there is no way that how many shots were put into that car? Three people died. Fourth took multiple gunshot wounds. There's no way that this doesn't go unanswered. I mean, I simply don't see that happening. And considering that we were involved, young people were involved in this, and it's now summer, we should all be thinking about that and keep that in mind.
Well, and there's going to be some tough questions to answer by the sheriff, because the last two budget years, he has gotten, 80 cops each year, 80 brand new positions. And, you know, that was the answer. You know, when we get these new positions filled, this is going to address this crime. And I know it takes, 11 months, I believe, to train a police officer to get on the street. But, after a certain period, you got to answer to that.
And he's asking for more money.
And he's asking for more, of course. Yeah.
Well, and this is happening at the same time as the Washington Post released their big data dump and investigation on the largest cities of America. And the last 11 years, Jacksonville has seen an astronomical amount of murders. And a lot of them, many of them, if not most of them, are unsolved.
Oh,
and
about 1,100, I think a few more, right, actually, mm-hmm. And about half are unsolved.
There you go.
Yeah, lots of cold cases.
It's worth pointing out that Ryan mentioned the uniform crime report numbers that the governor was just in town talking about. According to those numbers, in 2017, Duval County saw 112 murders, which when you break down the murder rate, that is about 12 murders per 100,000 people. Miami-Dade, for example, that is about 7 per 100,000. So while we make up about 5% of the state's population, we account for nearly 11% of the state's murders.
Yeah.
It's a problem.
Disproportionate, for sure. Drew emails the show, please say died by suicide, not committed suicide. That's something that we've gotten a lot of feedback about with the deaths of Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain in recent days. Thanks for that email, Drew. And yeah, when you say committed, it sort of implies that there was a crime. And it's really a function more of someone's despair and mental illness. So thanks for that, Drew. Richard is downtown. Go ahead, Richard.
Yes. I know a lot of problems happen in the summertime when a lot of these teenagers get out of school and they're just running around, nothing to do, can't get a job. And I'm wondering why all the large companies in this city couldn't agree to hire some of these teenagers part-time during the summer, nobody over 18 or nobody over 19 for the summer, for summer jobs, to get them off the street and maybe teach them a little bit and let them learn some kind of a trade.
Thanks, Richard. Thanks for that. Yeah. And some companies do that, David, but not nearly enough.
No. And, I think it could be some sort of, if I'm Aaron Bowman, the incoming city council president, who is attached at the hip to the Jack's Chamber, that's an initiative. That's an opportunity for you to maybe encourage your friends at these companies to do some sort of apprenticeship program.
Absolutely.
To expand that, right?
Yeah. Speaking of big companies, We want to make a note of a big business story this week. Vistar Credit Union, did you hear this? They're buying the 23-story downtown SunTrust Tower, and it will be renamed Vistar Tower as Vistar makes its headquarters move downtown. It's the biggest corporate relocation to the urban core since EverBank did it back in 2011, and they are bringing 600 to 700 employees to the downtown footprint. A story first reported in the Daily Record, David Cotton. Big move.
Yeah, absolutely. This particular building has had a lot of updates done to it. From what I know, it was a very quick move by Vistar. SunTrust will be in there for, I believe, until the end of the year, maybe early next year. But yeah, absolutely. 600, 700, you know, new people in an office building that had, I believe, 130,000 square feet of, you know, vacant space. And now they'll have that eventually taken up.
All right. And we've talked about a lot of really tragic and serious stories this hour, but you've got to laugh sometimes to keep from crying. So finally, it's our look at the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from around the state this week. Luckily, there is never a shortage of material. Here it is for you right now. Only in Florida, the critter edition. There are lots of critter stories in this state. Only in Florida does a Home Depot employee get attacked by a customer's pet monkey.
What?
How would you like that to happen on your shift? Police in Okeechobee County say Tina Ballard left her pet spider monkey in her truck when she went inside the Home Depot. The monkey was on a leash but got free and attacked an employee standing outside the store. Marilyn Howard was in the break area when the monkey went after her. She grabbed it by its leash, but it climbed on her back and bit her twice and also scratched her face. So don't bring your monkey to Home Depot, people.
No. Wow.
It's monkey business.
Speaking of animals only in Florida, does a man get arrested for stealing zoo animals? 20-year-old Cedric Price is under arrest. Police at Santa Fe College Teaching Zoo say, I guess there is such a thing, that he stole 7 animals from their zoo and kept them in his apartment. Police recovered 3 box turtles, 2 redfoot tortoises, a squirrel, and a skink. You know what a skink is? It's a reptile, not a skunk. And Price is charged with grand theft. Why would you want those?
Well, according to one of my friends and reporters at the Times Union, he was trying to live in a Dr. Seuss novel or a Dr. Seuss book. So that makes sense.
Gotcha. Sounds good.
Makes sense.
It makes total sense.
This is like an animal house.
Right? A real live animal house.
There you go. You guys are great. And thanks for spending some Friday time with us. Thanks, Angela Spears, Ryan Bank, David Cotton, and Tessa Duvall.
Have a good weekend.
Take care.
We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
Raining or it's cold, and the animals will love it if you do. Something tells me it's all happening at the zoo. I do believe it.
WJCT and Baptist Health are pleased to announce that Bobby Thomas, beauty and fashion expert and author of The Power of Style, Everything You Need to Know Before You Get Dressed, will be this year's keynote speaker at A Day for Her, Saturday, August 18th at the Hyatt Hotel. Bobby, the style editor for The Today Show, will share Bobby's buzz tips on everything from favorite beauty tricks to her favorite lifestyle finds. For more information or to purchase tickets, log on to wjct.org/events.
Hi, I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Join us Friday for the Florida Roundup, a live call-in program where you talk about the biggest stories in the state.
This Friday, a new report says thousands of Confederate monuments remain in place across the South, including many here in Florida. Also, election protection. How secure is your Florida ballot this summer and fall?
Join the conversation on the Florida Roundup.
Fridays at 1 on WJCT.
Find out what it means to be a modern-day Viking.
Most people have a wrong image of the Vikings.
What the Belgians think about themselves.
The Flemish are more industrious there. They're workers.
And how you use body language in Bulgaria to communicate.
It's completely different than the rest of the world. When we are saying no, we are actually nodding our head.
On the next Travel with Rick Steves.
Saturday morning at 7 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
On the next Jazz Night in America, exploring DIY jazz. with music from the DC Jazz Festival.
It's donation-based shows for the most part. All the money from the door goes to the artists. It's just really just an open, inclusive situation for artists and musicians.
I'm Christian McBride. Join us on the next Jazz Night in America.
Saturday nights at 8 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, some exciting news on the local media front. In an era when most newspapers are getting smaller by the day and laying many people off, guess what? One Jacksonville paper is expanding. Something to cheer about. Observer Media Group, publisher of the Daily Record, has unveiled some big changes at their 105-year-old newspaper. A new name, a new design, and the launch of a new free weekly business paper. Now, this free publication is the Jacksonville Record and Observer, and it debuted Thursday at more than 50 locations downtown and other spots around the area. Here with more, we welcome publisher Matt Walsh and one of our regular contributors, editor Karen Bruni Mathis. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And Matt Walsh, congratulations. This is so exciting to see a new media entity expanding, adding content, a brand new paper coming out every week. How did all this come about?
We just felt like there is a great opportunity in this market and a great appetite in this business community in Jacksonville. One of the things I love about Jacksonville is it embraces business in a big way, much more than you see in many markets around the state. And so we felt like, hey, let's go for it. Let's be a little more aggressive than what we have been. And we thought about the free weekly because we wanted to broaden our reach and get more people aware of the Daily Record.
Which, by the way, Karen Bruni Mathis, has been around for 105 years in the city. In addition to all the news about the business community and downtown, you're also known for reporting and publishing court records and public notices, but a whole lot more.
Oh, yes, indeed. I mean, we are the official publication of the court system. And of course, we have the paid legal notices. And that is incredible content as well. In fact, when I first moved to Jacksonville, which was, I started in journalism in Jacksonville 40 years ago this month.
Oh my goodness.
And I remember reading the Daily Record religiously because all of the court records then were not online, and that's where we could find it. And there was great news in those court records.
And you break a lot of stories going through records every day, we need to point out.
Like, every day. There is so much happening in the city, as Matt said, and especially in the business community. This business community is really expanding in this economy, and there's a lot more coming.
So, yes, more to come. And Matt Walsh, people can not only go online to jacksdailyrecord.com, but they can pick up the actual print publication. Dozens of places now each week to pick up this new paper.
That's correct. We're printing 5,000 copies to start with of the new Record and Observer, and we're distributing them in a lot of office buildings downtown and other business hubs around Jacksonville. And hopefully people, when they see it, they'll be intrigued by it, pick it up, and become loyal readers.
Now, what's the business model that you've put together for success? Because as I mentioned, print media has been struggling for many years. In a time when so many publications are having a hard time, you're actually expanding. What's your secret?
Good people. It always comes down to good people. But we feel like we are in the right niche in the newspaper business, in addition to the Daily Record. We have 12 other newspapers, and most of them are free community weeklies. So we specialize in publishing content that is very local. A lot of times people might refer to it as hyper-local information. And it's not surprising. People love to read about what's going on in their neighborhoods. They love to read about people in their communities. And we feel like people can get all the national, international news they want on their smartphones from various sources, but nobody can cover the local communities the way we can.
Particularly your own shining star, Karen Bruni Mathis. I'm not objective about you. I've been a fan for many years. And as you look at the front page of this new publication that you brought with you into the studio, I'm holding it in my hand, the Jacksonville Daily Record. A slew of stories broken by you on the front page.
We had a lucky day that day.
And these are all written by you. Vistar buying the SunTrust Tower. Ash Properties, the winning bidder for the BB&T Tower, and a feature on Harry Frisch, the guy who built Beaver Street Fisheries, all hyperlocal stories. Your contacts, your acumen in business, acumen in the community is so well regarded. You bring so many great guests onto our air as well for segments you do with us. And so a lot of this success, I think, is due to you as well, and just your reputation in the community, Karen. Oh,
I would agree if I could butt in and say absolutely. I've known Karen for 30 years, and she is just an amazing business journalist, and there's nobody in the state who knows her community the way Karen does.
Well, there's no pressure there.
I mean, you make your rounds every day. Don't you? You go out every morning and comb through records. And
we're fortunate. Things have really changed in the past 30 and 40 years as so many records are online now. So it's so much easier to keep in touch with what is going on throughout our 5 and 7 county area, as well as in Duval County. But a lot of it's the research, putting in the time. And Melissa, thank you very much for your compliments. But my goodness, you're the greatest reporter and anchor in Jacksonville. So, yeah.
Well, you have to say that. You're in here with me, right?
No, but it's true. It's true.
No, well, you know what I actually like about this too. I'm old fashioned enough to really enjoy picking up a print publication. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I just think all of the teeth gnashing over how we're losing that. I think that what you're doing is so great, Matt, because you're saying, no, we're going to continue to print this paper, and we're going to even print more editions of this paper.
Our company firmly believes that print is not going away. You know, you talk to old media people, and they'll tell you that when TV came around, newspapers thought, oh, this is the end of newspapers. You know, well, it didn't happen. And even though we know that digital is really becoming a primary source for so many people, there's still a place for a good print product that has a special niche, like the Daily Record and the Record and Observer.
And, you know, of course, there have been downsizings at other outlets around town, as people well know. That creates an opportunity, I guess, for a publication like the Daily Record, doesn't it?
Oh, it does, because as other publications might need to scale back on their reporting and choose their spots to report, that opens up the other media like us to go in for those spots. And we've been very fortunate as well. There are so many good journalists in Jacksonville. We're fortunate. We have Monty Zicker, who is an award-winning designer. He designed that publication. It's wonderful. And we have David Cotton, who was just here, in Jacksonville. Mark Bash and Max Marbin and Scott Saylor. It's a great team.
Thank you both, and congratulations. Thank you both for being here today to share some good news from the media world. It's the new publication from the Jacksonville Daily Record. Pick it up every Thursday and go to jacksdailyrecord.com. Matt, Karen, congrats to you both.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you, Melissa.
In a moment, don't miss it as we speak to rising indie folk band The Hunts. It's a preview of their free concert tonight in Hemming Park after this.
Nemours is not simply a place for care. Nemours is a way of caring for children. Our promise means we'll do whatever is in our power to help children grow up healthy, regardless of ability to pay. You can help. Nemours.org/ourpromise.
Wayne Hogan of the Tara Hogan Personal Injury and Wrongful Death Law Firm. One text or call could hurt your company's bottom line if an employee causes an accident. Learn about Tara Hogan's distracted driving presentations for the workforce at waynehogan.law.
Primaries, pardons, parents pulled from their children at the border. Also, the president picks a fight with the Eagles, fumbles over the War of 1812, and the EPA gets itself into a pickle.
She loves Chick-fil-A as a franchise of faith, and it's one of the best in the country.
Plenty to chew on in the Friday News Roundup, next time on 1A.
Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
On the next Fresh Air, we remember feminist and the first female president of Smith College, Jill Kirkconway. She wrote three acclaimed memoirs, including The Road from Corrine, about growing up on an Australian sheep farm, where she did farm labor 4 days a week. On Friday, she did her schoolwork to the smell of her mother's baking.
I felt totally indulged, and I've never felt about learning any other way.
Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
I'm Ira Flatto. This week on Science Friday, come on a treasure hunt through the world's natural history museums, where something is always hiding in plain sight. You just have to open the drawers. Plus, soil samples dug up by the Curiosity rover are helping to map out what a 3-billion-year-old Martian lake would look like. It's all on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Friday at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Finally, this hour, they're an indie folk band made up of a family of seven brothers and sisters. The Hunts have millions of followers on Spotify and a growing fan base at festivals around the country. Guess what? They're playing Jacksonville tonight, a free concert in downtown Hemming Park. We've got a preview as we welcome Christina Parrish Stone. She runs Friends of Hemming Park. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
And on the line, we've got the Hunts as they head down to Jacksonville from Atlanta. They're calling us live from their RV, I think. Hey, the Hunts, are you there?
Hello.
Hi.
I'm Jesse from the Hunts.
Good morning, Hunts. And it's so good to hear you on the show. It's great to hear your music. So you're a family of seven siblings, and it's my understanding your parents were your first music teachers. Is that right?
Yeah. My mom and dad were musicians, and they taught each one of us how to play since we were little kids. And as we grew older, we just started writing our own music and touring around the country.
Now, you're playing Hemming Park tonight. I think you're heading down here right now from Atlanta. Free show for the fans. That's exciting. What can we look forward to?
Yeah. Yeah, we're excited to come. We're driving right now, actually. I had a show in Atlanta last night, and now Hemming Park tonight. I think we're going at 7 p.m., and we're just stoked to play there.
It's exciting to have you here in town. Christina Parrish Stone, you first became a fan of the Hunts when you saw them open for OAR a couple of years ago, correct?
That's true. I had never heard of the Hunts before I saw them at the Florida Theater in 2016. And I have to say, as wonderful as OAR is, I think that everyone in the theater agreed with me that the Hunts were the highlight of that show. They put on an incredible performance, and we are beyond thrilled that they're going to be at Hemming Park tonight and that we can offer this to the community for free.
And you've been programming amazing stuff in Hemming Park since you took over. So this is just one more example of that. A free concert, rising band, what could be better?
True. We hope to do lots more of that. We have great sponsors who enable us to do so. We also try to focus on some local musicians when we bring in national acts like this. We've got Stranger Wolf performing tonight, too. They're fantastic. Keeping it all a family show. The opener is going to be my daughter, Hadley Parrish Cotton, who plays a lot in Jacksonville. But we're going to be doing this tonight, rain or shine. The weather is looking pretty good right now, but it's a little iffy. But we encourage everybody to show up. Even if the weather's bad, we've got tents, and we'll keep everybody dry.
Now, let's go back to the band on the bus. You guys grew up in Chesapeake, Virginia, correct? So you've been playing as a family for a long time before you went professional, right?
I'm sorry, are you breaking up a little? Can you say that again?
I said you grew up in Chesapeake, Virginia, it's my understanding, and you've just been playing music together all your lives.
Yeah, we're from Virginia. That's our hometown, and we've just been playing together since we were little. And we love to write and sing ourselves, kind of like indie folk. Tons of instruments.
And we're kind of losing your connection with you. So let's just, you know what, we're going to close with a little of their beautiful music. Thanks for getting on the phone with us. And Christina Parrish Stone, Executive Director at Friends of Hemming Park, thanks for bringing the Hunts to town. They take the stage tonight at 7?
Yes, the event starts at 5 with food trucks, cold beverages, and other local music.
Go downtown to Hemming Park tonight. It's a free concert from the Hunts. And let's enjoy the music as we get ready to hear 1A. By the way, I'll be off next week heading up to the University of Rhode Island for a fellowship about climate science awarded by the school's Metcalf Institute. Hope to bring back what I've learned to help all our listeners understand how climate change affects Florida. Brian Bank is hosting next week. 1A's up next. We'll close with some more of the Hunts. Have a great weekend.
I use my paper and telescope to show you the stars, and then when you're hard, how could we ever make believe? Ooh, 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 ooh. I can see, I can see, I can see a sunrise. Call me out from the dark, 'cause I'm broken inside. I can see, I can see, I can see a sunrise. Call me out from the dark, 'cause I'm broken inside. Up above the sky, up above the rocks, I hear your voice calling me out of the dark inside. Up above the sky, up above the rocks, I hear your voice calling me out of the darkness. Caught up like parachutes, caught up like parachutes. Oh, how we fly. Caught up like parachutes, caught up like parachutes. Oh, how we fly. Ooh, 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 ooh. Dark and brought me into the light. You called me out from the dark and brought me into.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.